Publicity Campaign, first published in London Evening News, 1953, collected in The Other Side of the Sky.
For the first few decades after the Martians lowered New Jersey real estate values, referring to Orson Welles' famous War of the Worlds broadcast, benevolent aliens were few and far between, perhaps the most notable example being Klaatu in The Day the Earth Stood Still. Yet nowadays, largely thanks to E.T., friendly and even cuddly aliens are taken almost for granted. Where does the truth lie? Of course, hostile and malevolent aliens make for much more exciting stories than benevolent ones. Moreover, the things you wouldn't like to meet in the 1950s and 60s, as has often been pointed out, were reflections of the paranoia of that time, particularly in the United States. Now the Cold War has, hopefully, given way to the tepid truce, we may look at the skies with less apprehensions. For we have already met Darth Vader, and he is us.
The concussion of the last atom bomb still seemed to linger as the lights came on again. For a long time, no one moved. Then the assistant producer said innocently, "Well, R.B., what do you think of it?" R.B. heaved himself out of his seat while his acolytes waited to see which way the cat would jump. It was then that they noticed that R.B.'s cigar had gone out. Why, that hadn't happened even at the preview of GWTW. "Boys," he said ecstatically, "we've got something here. How much did you say it cost, Mike?" $6.5 million, R.B. "It was cheap at the price. Let me tell you, I'll eat every foot of it if the gross doesn't beat Quo Vadis." He wheeled as swiftly as could be expected for one of his bulk upon a small man still crouched in a seat at the back of the projection room. "Snap out of it, Joe. The Earth's saved. You've seen all these space films. How does this line up with the earlier ones?" Joe came to with an obvious effort. "Well, there's no comparison," he said. "It's got all the suspense of The Thing without that awful letdown at the end when you saw the monster was human. The only picture that comes within miles of it is War of the Worlds. Some of the effects in that were nearly as good as ours, but of course George Pal didn't have 3D, and that sure makes a difference. When the Golden Gate Bridge went down, I thought that pier was going to hit me." "The bit I liked best," put in Tony Auerbach from Publicity, "was when the Empire State Building split right up the middle. You don't suppose the owners might sue us, though?" "Of course not. No one expects any building to stand up to, what does Script call them, city busters. And after all, we wiped out the rest of New York as well. Blah, that scene in the Holland Tunnel when the roof gave way. Whoa, next time I'll take the ferry." "Yes, that was very well done, almost too well done. But what really got me was those creatures from space. The animation was perfect. How'd you do it, Mike?" "A trade secret," said the proud producer. "Still, I'll let you in on it. A lot of that stuff is genuine."
"What?"
"Oh, don't get me wrong. We haven't been on location to Sirius B, but they developed a micro camera over at Caltech, and we used that to film spiders in action. We cut in the best shots, and I think you'd have a job telling which was micro and which was the full-size studio stuff. And now you understand why I wanted the aliens to be insects and not octopuses, like the script said first."
"Well, there's a good publicity angle here," said Tony. "One thing worries me, though, that scene where the monsters kidnap Gloria. Do you suppose the censor... I mean, the way we've done it, it almost looks..."
"Ah, quit worrying. That's what people are supposed to think. Anyway, we make it clear in the next reel that they really want her for dissection, so that's all right."
"It'll be a riot," gloated R.B., a faraway gleam in his eye as if he was already hearing the avalanche of dollars pouring into the box office.
"Look, we'll put another million into publicity. Watch the sky. The Syrians are coming. And we'll make thousands of clockwork models. Can't you imagine them scuttling around on their hairy legs? People love to be scared, and we'll scare them. And by the time we finish, no one will be able to look at the sky without getting the creeps. I leave it to you, boys. This picture is gonna make history."
He was right. Monsters from Space hit the public 2 months later. Within a week of the simultaneous London and New York premieres, there could have been no one in the Western world who had not seen the posters screaming, "Earth, beware," or had not shuddered at the photograph of the hairy horrors stalking along deserted Fifth Avenue on their thin, many-jointed legs. Blimps cleverly disguised as spaceships cruised across the skies to the vast confusion of pilots who encountered them, and clockwork models of the alien invaders were everywhere, scaring old ladies out of their wits. The publicity campaign was brilliant, and the picture would undoubtedly have run for months had it not been for a coincidence as disastrous as it was unforeseeable. While the number of people fainting at each performance was still news, the skies of Earth filled suddenly with long, lean shadows sliding swiftly through the clouds.
Prince Zervashny was good-natured, but inclined to be impetuous, a well-known failing of his race. There was no reason to suppose that his present mission, that of making a peaceful contact with the planet Earth, would present any particular problems. The correct technique of approach had been thoroughly worked out over many thousands of years, as the Third Galactic Empire slowly expanded its frontiers, absorbing planet after planet, sun upon sun. There was seldom any trouble. Really intelligent races can always cooperate, once they have got over the initial shock of learning that they are not alone in the universe. It was true that humanity had emerged from its primitive warlike stage only within the last generation. This, however, did not worry Prince Zervashny's chief advisor, Sigiznin II, professor of astropolitics. "It's a perfectly typical Class E culture," said the professor. "Technically advanced, morally rather backward. However, they are already used to the conception of spaceflight and will soon take us for granted. The normal precautions will be sufficient until we have won their confidence." "Very well," said the prince. "Tell the envoys to leave at once." It was unfortunate that the normal precautions did not allow for Tony Auerbach's publicity campaign, which had now reached new heights of interplanetary xenophobia. The ambassadors landed in New York's Central Park on the very day that a prominent astronomer, unusually hard up and therefore amenable to influence, announced in a widely reported interview that any visitors from space probably would be unfriendly. The luckless ambassadors, heading for the United Nations building, had got as far south as 60th Street when they met the mob. The encounter was very one-sided, and the scientists at the Museum of Natural History were most annoyed that there was so little left for them to examine. Prince Zervashny tried once more, on the other side of the planet, but the news had got there first. This time the ambassadors were armed and gave a good account of themselves before they were overwhelmed by sheer numbers. Even so, it was not until the rocket bomb started climbing up toward his fleet that the prince finally lost his temper and decided to take drastic action. It was all over in 20 minutes, and was really quite painless. Then the prince turned to his advisor and said, with considerable understatement, "That appears to be that. And now, can you tell me exactly what went wrong?" Sigiznin II knitted his dozen flexible fingers together in acute anguish. It was not only the spectacle of the neatly disinfected Earth that distressed him, though to a scientist the destruction of such a beautiful specimen is always a major tragedy. At least equally upsetting was the demolition of his theories and, with them, his reputation. "I just don't understand it," he lamented. "Of course, races at this level of culture are often suspicious and nervous when contact is first made, but they'd never had visitors before, so there was no reason for them to be hostile." "Hostile? They were demons. I think they were all insane." The prince turned to his captain, a tripedal creature who looked rather like a ball of wool balanced on three knitting needles. "Is the fleet reassembled?" "Yes, sire." "Then we will return to base at optimum speed. This planet depresses me." On the dead and silent Earth, the posters still screamed their warnings from 1,000 hoardings. The malevolent insectile shapes shone pouring from the skies, bore no resemblance at all to Prince Zervashny, who, apart from his four eyes, might have been mistaken for a panda with purple fur, and who, moreover, had come from Rigel, not Sirius. But, of course, it was now much too late to point this out.